So this body scan is a gateway to presence through the body. So entering into a position that is most appropriate for you, the one that is easeful and one in which you can remain awake. And making yourself at home in this moment, sensing into the pressure of the body against the earth or whatever is between you and the ground. Perhaps aware of the movement of breath in and out. And letting awareness scan through the whole body, allowing a loosening, a softening wherever it's called for. And deepen ease by bringing a sense of kindness, a sense of caring to the body. And now narrowing the focus to bring awareness to the feet, sensing where they touch the ground. And then inside to any energy sensation there might be, tingling or throbbing, softening, and noticing sensation that may be quite subtle. This is a practice of familiarizing ourselves with the experiences that show up in the body, sensing into the feet. Bringing awareness and a sense of ease to the volume and the length of the legs as they taper up to the thighs. Sensing into the aliveness of the legs. Sensations may be vague or crystal clear. Allowing the softness and awareness to spread into the pelvis now. And now spreading up into the belly and softening. Aware of the easy flow of breath through the belly. And perhaps aware of other sensations in the abdominal region. Just dropping into the aliveness present here. Softening through the back body with an awareness of all that is to be noticed here. The breath, energy, tingling, tightness, all that is wanted, all that is unwanted, and allowing what's here. Not caught up in anything else, like the past or the future, desires, aversions, delusions. Just sensing into the back body now. Feeling the aliveness in the upper torso. Perhaps aware of the lungs and the heart in a visceral way. And softening. Sensing into the expanse between the shoulders and across the chest, allowing the shoulders to soften. Spreading the ease into the arms as they hang from the shoulders down to the wrists. And allowing the hands to rest easy and effortlessly, softening, and then again softening, sensing the vibrations of aliveness inside and out. Just staying with the sensation at the hands for a moment. Opening at the neck and throat, softening. Noticing any sense of aliveness at the chin and around the mouth. Relaxing inside the mouth, the tongue, the upper and lower palates, the back of the throat. Softening at the cheeks and through the sinuses and the nose. Sensing into the face, at the eyes, and the eye creases. Letting go. Across the brow. Bringing a release to the face and the scalp, softening. And inside the scalp now, in the skull, to the mind, offering a sense of warmth and ease. To the mind. And widening the view once again to include the whole body as a big field of sensation. In which nothing is still, like a dance of aliveness, taking in everything at once. Resting in awareness. Sensations. Bubbling up, moving, dissolving, vast, awake awareness. Re-relaxing back in again and again. Aware of the changing nature of sensation. Aware of aliveness. Maybe shifting to the breath as an anchor, the river of breathing. Letting you know you are here in the center of now. No need to control the breath. It's natural that attention will get lost in the drifting clouds of thought. When you notice, just label thinking and relax back into the world of sensation or movement of the breath. Noticing the gap between thoughts, the mystery of presence. That is right here. Make yourself at home in this presence. In bringing this body scan to a close with a poem by Wu Men. 10,000 flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, snow in winter. If your mind isn't clouded by unnecessary things, this is the best season of your life. Sort of assembling any embodied presence that may have slipped away in our short break as we sit and prepare to take in these words. So, what is embodied presence anyway? I like this definition I found by Philip Shepherd. Embodied presence isn't about quieting the thoughts in the head and noticing the sensations of the body from there. It's about bringing the abstract intelligence of the head into relationship with the body's intelligence, integrating the body and the mind. It's an alignment of the citta in Sanskrit, or the heart mind. Primitive man and woman, acted more easily from this place of attunement. But as we evolved more and more, we became more enchanted by the mind and living from this place, with the illusion of control over our world. So Siddhartha was the Buddha before he became enlightened, the Buddha as a young man. And in his palace growing up, it was the pleasures of the body that were what was celebrated in the day, a life of luxury. His father, the king, had been told by the sages before Siddhartha was born that his son would become a great warrior. And there was one sage that predicted his son would become a spiritual leader. The king was very interested in steering his son's fate toward taking over the kingdom. And so he built the palace walls high and gave Siddhartha everything he ever could want so that he wouldn't be interested in seeking outside the palace walls. But the Buddha-to-be became curious. And that was when he went outside the palace walls and came in contact with aging and sickness and death, and made the courageous and difficult decision to leave the palace and find the answers to the questions that had arisen for him about this suffering. He thought the answer might lie in spiritual seeking. He knew the answers were not at the palace. He spent 6 years wandering and learning from the meditation masters of the day and practicing diligently. And he had still not found the answer he was seeking. So he sat under the Bodhi tree, determined to practice until he did. And so for 6 days and six nights, he practiced uninterrupted, except by the demon god Mara, who used all the weapons at his disposal, did not want Siddhartha becoming enlightened. He included desires like lust and greed, and aversions like fear and anger. Instead of ignoring Mara or driving him away, the Buddha-to-be calmly acknowledged his presence, saying, "I see you, Mara." He knew it was Mara and not his actual experience cultivating desire and delusion. And so the Buddha cut through the chains of suffering and became enlightened on that night. And then at last, challenge from Mara that the Buddha defend his claim of enlightenment. And the Buddha touched the earth and called the earth to witness his achievement. People could see the change instantly in Siddhartha and asked, "Who are you? A god? An angel?" And the Buddha said, "I am awake." This is not the last the Buddha would see Mara, who continued to try to catch the Buddha unaware. And the Buddha would invite Mara in for tea, serve him as an honored guest, offering Mara a cushion so that he could sit comfortably. The Buddha would then fill two earthen cups with tea, place them on the low table between them, and only then take his own seat. Mara would stay for a while and then get bored and go. But throughout, the Buddha remained free and undisturbed. The Buddha spoke of mindfulness of the body or embodied presence as the simplest and most direct form for overcoming the onslaughts of the demon Mara, the forces of ignorance and delusion in the mind, or not seeing clearly. Perhaps through your practice, you have become aware of just how powerful the mind is. We see this when we sit down to meditate, to quiet the mind, and find it impossible to stay in the moment without the mind wandering off into thinking. We are taught that this is okay. This is what the mind does. and that the practice includes not only sitting in the stillness, but also the interrupting of the mind in its wandering ways, noting where the mind has gone and returning again and again to the breath, the body. They are good touchstones for the present moment, because if we can sense the breath, feel the feet on the ground, we are here now. Why is it so hard? We are a culture that has become disembodied. We have handed the power over to our minds and forsaken our bodies because we seek the safety of control, of controlling our lives. Though it is just an illusion that our thinking has all the answers and can make everything all right. In the process, we miss out on experiencing our lives. As the mind keeps on spinning. So the body is the vessel we were given through which to experience life, and all experience registers as sensation in the body. We celebrate the birth of a new child and we feel it in our bodies. Our hearts fill and tears come to our eyes. We are present. We experience fear and anger as a car cuts closely in front of us. Our chest tightens and hands grasp the wheel, and we feel heat in our faces. Not all present moment experiences are easy or comfortable. The more stressed out we become, the more the mind takes over, trying earnestly to bring about a sense of safety and control to the situation, and at the same time whipping us up into a frenzy. The truth is, life unfolds as it will. We are not in control. And our practice asks us to let go of the reins and embrace the ride. Our formal practice guides us to the present moment through the sensations in the body, the breath, the sensation of touch, the sensation of hearing. Because here is where life is unfolding moment by moment. We want to be present for the moments in our lives, not left wondering what route was it that we took as we drove off to work once we get there, or where the years went when our kids were small. Not just the pleasant moments. It is in our best interest to be with the unpleasant events too. The first noble truth reminds us that there will be suffering in our lives. 10,000 joys, 10,000 sorrows. This awareness was a relief to me because up until that moment, I believed in my heart that if I was suffering, I had done something wrong or bad. It is so helpful to remember that we will have both joy and suffering. It's to be expected. It is not necessarily in my control. I grew to understand that I could manage whatever arises and be prepared for surprises. When in our heads we are off somewhere else, not present, the thinking mind works overtime to fix what's going on to suit us better. The mind can travel back and forth in time and fills with fantasy and fabrications, only making matters worse. When we are trapped in our minds, we are cut off from our hearts, from our wisdom. The body knows what to do. The practice allows us to trust the letting go of the steering wheel and know we will still breathe. We will be okay. And it's through the body that we will too learn about impermanence, that other important truth of our lives. This teaching too was a relief to me, though I didn't believe it at first when I heard it. It didn't take long, though, for me to give up fighting the temporary nature of all things. I couldn't find anything that lasted forever. Through our bodies, we feel this directly. The mind might tell us otherwise. So if the mind is so all-powerful and enticing that we leave our bodies on the regular, how do we come back home to our bodies? John O'Donohue says, "Our bodies know that they belong. It is our minds that make our lives so homeless." In our daily lives, when we notice that our mind has taken over again, we can practice pausing and perhaps labeling what it is our minds are engaged in. It is probably a habit that we will recognize, like catastrophizing, making things worse than they are, imagining, or planning, maybe controlling or judging. And then interrupting the mind, bringing it to the breath, the feet on the ground, the body. It's always right here, available to us. The present moment is uncomplicated. It is what it is. And if we can do this interrupting 1 out of 4 times we notice that the mind has wandered, we will strengthen our embodied presence. 1 in 4 times. Just interrupting the mind. We can see more clearly what's happening and choose more wisely what to do next. Our bodies are our refuge. The mind tends to distract us from the unpleasant because it can be scary. But honestly, it is the proliferating mind that makes the unpleasant appear worse than it really is. That is not to say that it is an easy task to be with what is uncomfortable, to sit in unpleasant situations. And as we do, though, we witness their impermanence, their instability, and we can let them go more easily. Practicing clinging to nothing takes a lot of energy to continue carrying around the unpleasant. The unpleasant that we're unwilling to look at. And we feel the anxiety of just knowing that it's there. So the inability to be with the uncomfortable means that the discomfort remains, though it's pushed down. We have anxiety about its presence, and we become exhausted carrying it around. That is suffering. In our formal meditation, we can practice staying with the breath and the body and intentionally recommitting over and over again to coming back when the mind takes over. Learning to come back into presence and then to stay. Strengthening those neuro pathways that form new habits in the mind, like stillness and rest. When Mara visits us in the form of troubling emotions or fearsome stories, we can say, "I see you, Mara," and clearly recognize the reality of cravings and fear that live in each human heart. By accepting these experiences with the warmth of compassion, we can offer Mara tea rather than fearfully driving him away. Seeing what is true, we hold what is seen with kindness in our hearts, embodied. We experience embodied presence each time we recognize and embrace our hurts and fears, our joys and celebrations. This embodied presence, finding the way back into our bodies and acting from the wisdom in our hearts, in the midst of endless thought proliferation, of emotional storms, of energetic ups and downs, we can always come back to just this breath, just this step, integrating the heart and the mind. Embodied presence. So I wanted to offer us a short integrating period of stillness, following all those words, seeing where they land. So just taking your seat one more time. And practicing presence, awareness of presence, embodied presence. And when the mind wanders, bringing it into alignment with the body, heart, and stillness. Allowing life to live through you. Rumi's wisdom is, come, O come, you worshiper, you wanderer, you lover of leaving, come. This is not a caravan of despair. Even if you have left your vow 1,000 times, still come and yet again come and stay. And some closing words by Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.